Shanann. S-H-A-N-A-N-N.
Hey guys, it's Kristen.
And David.
From You Had Me at Murder with a Chris Watts redo episode. What's this, you ask? This is a second attempt at reviewing the confession of Chris Watts and pronouncing the victim's name correctly. I also wanted to go further into detail of the confession interview. And you know what makes it really easy to do that?
What?
Using Anchor. Shall we get started?
Let's do it.
Okay. I'm sure everyone knows the case, but here's a little background. In August of 2018, Chris Watts claims he asked his wife, Shanann, for a divorce. And in a fit of rage, she strangled both of their daughters, Bella and Celeste. He, in turn, got upset and killed Shanann, who was 15 weeks pregnant with their son, Nico. So he then takes the bodies and dumps them at an oil site where he worked. The two girls were dumped in oil tanks and Shanann was buried in a shallow grave. Police charged him with the deaths of all of the victims. He pleaded guilty to all of the murders on November 6th to not get the death penalty. He was sentenced to life without parole.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that gets us to present day. Now, in February, the FBI, the CBI, and local police department, which was Frederick Police in Colorado, went to where Chris Watts is currently being held. When I initially heard Chris had released new details of the deaths of his wife and children, I thought he must be looking for a book deal or a movie deal. But the universe must have known that little me was gonna wonder if that's what he was doing, because in the interview he actually said he's never thought about writing a book when they asked him about it, but his mother does encourage him to write down his thoughts. So the truth is, the FBI, CBI, and local police sought him out for additional information, stating they felt like he was different from other murderers,
and they felt like he would open up a little bit more.
Right. Yeah. Now, to make this part make sense, I'm going to play the clip from the interview where they are telling him why they're there. Mm-hmm. Because it's hard to put into words what they're saying other than they just feel like he's different and they want to know more.
Right.
So we'll play that clip now.
All right.
Well, let me put some fears aside. We're not here for what you might think we might be here for.
They didn't know what this is, a computer room. I was like, I didn't know how to computer room.
Without computers.
Yeah. Exactly.
So you remember, I talked to you, Tammy talked to you, Dave talked to you. We're all from Colorado. And so the last time we talked to you, it's a different situation, right? Our investigation was open and your case was open. That's completely different now. So your case is completely closed. Nothing about what we're going to talk about today has anything to do with an open investigation. So we're not here to get more charges on you or get any statements from you that are going to jam you up anymore, right? That's all done. So all of our cases are closed and the court case is closed. So there's nothing that we're going to talk about today that's going to get you in any type of more trouble at all. And so that's, I wanted to make sure you knew that that's not why we're here.
Okay.
But why we are here. So the three of us work from three different agencies, right? Quite a bit different. CBI, FBI, and Frederick PD. Different goals. And the things that happened with you kind of all brought us together. And as the months have passed on since everything happened, we just keep in touch with each other and we keep talking to each other. And we've all separately kind of said, did Chris seem unique to you? And me and Tammy have talked about this. Dave and I have talked about this. Did Chris's situation seem different to you? And we keep having that conversation. We can't quite put our finger on it, right? We think that your life leading up to all of the things that happened were very interesting to us. And for me personally, I don't know if you remember, but one of the last things you told me was, hey, Graham, I'm sorry that I started lying to you. that's stuck with me for the last couple months. It's been ringing in my head, right? I've never, ever worked a case like this where someone told me that, ever. You know, and so as I walked away, I thought, Chris is different. Chris is a little bit unique in that regard. So in talking with Tammy and talking with Dave, I said, you know, what did you feel like when it all went down? When we were there, we were talking to you guys, and we all kind of, in our own different way and in our own different wording, said it all happened a bit too quick for us, right? So when we saw you last, we were talking and talking and talking about your family, about your parents, about everyone. And then the next thing you know, for me and Tammy and for Dave, all of a sudden some patrol officers came in and arrested you. And that was far quicker than we had hoped it would happen. And you understand why that happened, and we understand why that happened. But it left us with 1,000 questions that we didn't get to ask. And then even more importantly, I think it probably left you with 1,000 things that you didn't get to talk about.
They mentioned that they think all these things in his life that happened leading up to the murders were very interesting. To me, it seems just like your standard affair, and I don't see a difference between him and Scott Peterson or right. any other man that murders.
Yeah.
But once the agents and detectives have gotten Chris comfortable as to why they are there, they start off asking about other people who have claimed to have had an affair with him. The two names mentioned are Trent Bolt and Amanda McMahon. Trent claimed meeting Chris on WhatsApp, and Chris denied knowing what the app was. Amanda claimed to have had rendezvous with him in the Chick-fil-A parking lot. Chris's attorney previously showed him pictures of both people, and Chris denied knowing them. Chris was asked if he'd want to see them charged with a crime if they were warranted. He said no, and that they needed to look into themselves to figure out why they did that. Take a mental note of that last part, because I want to discuss that later on. But now, we don't know if this Trent and Amanda thing is true or not, but if it isn't true, then can we take a moment and ponder of the 15 minutes of fame phenomenon? Because 15 minutes of fame is sometimes weird, even in the best circumstances, like rescuing somebody or inventing something. But it's even more bizarre to insert yourself into someone's criminal life.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so, you know, this person has done something terrible, but you're going out of your way to try to connect yourself to them. It's, you know, it's weird. Like, why would you even do that? But in these cases, you know, you see these people or hear about these people who come out of the woodworks to try to, I don't know, is it to just try to get their name out there because they want to be connected? Is it the fame thing? I don't understand it, but it always seems to happen.
Yeah, I saw a comment that the Trent Bolt left in a Facebook group that said that him and any other person who had an affair with Chris weren't wrong. They just trusted a stranger.
But, yeah.
What, like what? I don't
but, know. You know, most normal people would want to distance themselves as much as possible from something like
yeah.
this.
Oh, yeah. I'd be like, I don't know this person.
Right. Yeah, you would hope that if you actually had an affair with somebody like this, that all the conversations were erased, that your phone number or name didn't show up in anything of their on their computer or their phone or anything like that. But then you have these
strange
people that just go out of their way to insert themselves.
Yeah. And now Nicole Kessinger, who he did have the affair with, which he said that's the only person he's had an affair with, she did ask him to do that.
Right.
And she didn't. So I'm pretty sure he didn't have these other affairs.
Right.
Now let's talk about his relationship with her, since we brought her up. According to Chris, Nicole is the only person he's had an affair with. He said it began around June 1st of 2018 when he first met Nicole at work. Initially, they ran into each other occasionally and would talk about work. Chris did become a field coordinator, which required him to spend more time in the office, and then he would constantly run into her. Around the fourth time of meeting Nicole, he mentioned that we moved from North Carolina. Nicole asked who he meant by we, and he took out his phone and showed her a picture of Bella and Celeste. But he did have a picture of Shanann on his lock screen, which he says she had to have seen.
Right. So she, I mean, so he's claiming she knew.
But she's saying she didn't.
But she's saying she did not.
Chris did not wear a wedding ring at work because it was too big for him from losing weight. So Nicole wouldn't have had that visual to know for a fact that he's married. But again, the picture was on the lock screen and he says that she did know. And that she's just saying she didn't, just trying to save face. So anytime you're not wearing a wedding ring, it's probably just a sign of trouble.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you're working in a profession that has you out doing manual labor, you know, sometimes it can be a safety hazard. Like, right. You're not wearing your wedding ring generally, like a machine shop. But there are certainly other ways that generally if you're happy and...
He could have said we, as in my wife and kids.
Right.
By the way, she's pregnant right now. Right. So there's bad sign number one.
Well, I guess, how old was the unborn child, or how
15
far?
15 weeks. So she was far enough at that point for him to, even if he didn't mention
right
that baby, he clearly had two other children right. walking this earth and a wife. Now Shanann always checked Chris's cell phone, so he used his work phone to communicate with Nicole, and on his personal phone, he used a secret calculator app to store his photos with Nicole. Nicole, according to Chris, initiated the text messaging with him, and it continued until one day it just kind of went to a different level. That were his words, kind of went to a different level. He thought his relationship with Nicole was just flirting at work. FYI, it's never just flirting at work. That's not good. Well, nothing good comes from flirting at work if you're a married person.
No, and just thinking about that timeline, though, and motivation for, you know, what he might have been thinking, if they first met in June of 2018 and the murders took place
August.
I mean, that's a quick, like, that's a quick time or a very short time for this affair to have escalated to that point.
Well, yeah. Okay. So Chris and Shanann took a trip to San Diego from June 22nd to June 26th, but he agreed to meet Nicole when he got back. So that's the first time they hung out, was after that. From there, they continued to see each other the entire month of July. That's when Shanann and the kids are in North Carolina visiting family. The first time Chris and Nicole went out, they were going to see a movie, but it ended up being sold out. So they walked around and talked for 2 hours. And I'm sure that was just so exciting because it's new and it's like a secret and you're out, but you're not. And it's like risky. I'm sure it was just a fabulous time. As their dates continued, they did things like go to a Shelby car museum. They went to a drag race. They were camping in Sand Dune National Park. And Chris said these are things that reminded him of his childhood. And if you've ever been in an unhappy marriage, this all probably felt really exciting and exhilarating. So he probably was just...
Yeah.
Wrapped up in it.
All in.
Yep. And he said he felt like he could be himself around Nicole, unlike with Shanann. He never had to worry about saying something stupid around her, and he never had to think ahead of what to say.
But, you know, again, it's such a short period of time to know somebody, to even have those kind of feeling, like it never has to think about what he's saying. I mean, you've known him for 2 months, three months, really, so...
But I wonder if it's that whole idea that you could be yourself, because it doesn't matter if it doesn't work out with this fair person. You still got your other person to go home to. So maybe that's what he was feeling. I don't know. Chris recalls that when he was with Nicole, he didn't think and there was blinders in his face. He stayed at Nicole's almost the entire month of July while Shanann and the girls were out of town and didn't have to think about being a father and a husband because he wasn't surrounded by reminders of his family because he wasn't at home. He now wishes it had never happened and he'd never had blinders over his eyes and could see what was really going on.
Right.
He must say this similar, something similar to this like 18 more times during this interview. Come on, Chris.
Well, and also makes you wonder how much of the, how much did the affair really play a part in the crime? Like in him getting to the point where he was going to kill his wife and kids.
I think it ended up being like the perfect storm in his head. Like he wanted to be with this woman and he was angry and it all came to a head. Now up until this point, everything seems just like your typical affair. It's like in his mind, it's perfect and you just can't see any good in your normal life. So if he hadn't killed his family and we heard of this man having an affair, which that's shame on you, but right. Okay. But that's not what happened. He realizes now, though, that he had plenty of opportunities to end the affair. His friend had asked him to go to the Broncos game on August 11th, and Chris said no. If he had went, he wouldn't have had to use his credit card that he shared with Shanann to pay for dinner. He said he should have went to the game and told Nicole he didn't have a babysitter, and it would possibly have sent him on a different trajectory. I'm just shaking my head. when he was in San Diego in June, he had also briefly mentioned Nicole to another friend, and he feels like if he had told the friend more information, that the friend would have set him straight. So he's relying on those two things. Another interesting side note about his relationship with Nicole, he deleted his Facebook account once Nicole had told her friends about him because he was worried his friends would look, her friends would look him up and see he had a pregnant wife.
Well,
I think he should have known at that point, like, hey, this isn't good. Like, even if he hadn't figured it out by then, like, if I'm deleting my Facebook because people, I don't want people to know about me.
Well, you know, and that also makes me wonder, you know, so he's saying that she must have known that he was married. She's saying she did not know. If it was, if that was really what was going on, why is she going out there and telling her friends about this? You know, Norm, that's, yeah, that would be something you would think that they would both be keeping secret. You know, her just as much as him, because so he's married, he's committed to this person and obviously doesn't want that secret out. But now she's,
yeah,
the homewrecker, yeah, you know, and generally people don't want to be seen that way either. So, yeah. Just kind of makes me wonder how much, you know, I think we've talked a bit about this, outside of our podcast about where the truth really is in this situation, how much of this is even the real truth.
Well, so another thing that I had read was that he had told her he was at the end of the marriage and was just finalizing up the divorce and had asked her to help him look for like a bachelor pad for when the divorce is final. So she can't say completely that she didn't know, but maybe she didn't know how bad it, or, you know, how good it was on his end.
Right.
And he was just making it seem bad.
Ugh. She said that he was having her help, or he's saying that?
He's saying
that. Because again, you know, it could just be
right
something else that he's made up. You know, how much of what he's even told us as the quote unquote truth is the truth? I don't know. And yeah, what are the motivations behind him saying any of this stuff, whether it's true or or not true?
He says he feels like the relationship with Nicole contributed to the murders, but he said she never asked him to do anything. But he did tell Nicole that it felt like she had him on a leash and she would be able to tug him away from Shanann.
Yeah.
So if he told her that, so like, let's just say that all of this is true. If he did tell her that, then she had to have known that they weren't actually getting divorced. I don't know. Whatever she did, like, I don't think she contributed to the murders at all. And I just think that she's probably trying to have as least to do with this as she possibly can.
Right.
So that's some information on the relationship with Nicole.
Or she did have something to do, and he's lying about the whole thing to protect her. Like, it's just so...
Yeah, it's true.
He just seems to be... I don't know what the actual term would be, but seems to be a good liar.
Yeah, well, if you listen to this whole thing, we know he did it, but the way he sits there and talks about it, I halfway feel convinced that he didn't do it. Just the way he's just so, like... chill. It sounds like he's talking about sitting on a dock fishing. It's weird.
And when you see the interviews that he did after they were missing, with the news, to look at his face and watch him speak, knowing what he's actually done, if that's what he's actually done, is disturbing. To be able to keep a straight face and talk about your wife and your kids just missing and how you wish they would come home and stuff like that.
Or like, oh, I miss making them eat their peas. But that was only like 18 hours after they'd went missing. So it's like you've missed one meal with them and you're going
But to even be able to talk about that with a straight face.
Yeah.
Knowing. I mean, he's like smirking. I'm smirking or smiling in some parts of that, as if he... really believes that there's just something, you know, they're just gone. And
it's something I just don't think is connecting in his head.
Right. It's probably those patches.
We'll talk about those. I did want to talk a little bit about Chris Watts growing up and his relationship with his parents, because I feel like sometimes things happen in your childhood that, you know, can lead you down weird paths. Now, he was the baby in the family and never had a girlfriend in high school. His longest relationship before Shanann was 6 months. He refers to himself as more reserved and goes with the flow. Growing up, he had only been in one fight. He and the other kid ripped each other's shirt and left crying. He was never bullied in school, but was not popular. He had a Jim Carrey bowl cut. He said his self-esteem was not low, but he didn't want to be part of a group or clique. He enjoyed flying under the radar. All of that sounds pretty normal. Mm-hmm. I actually, minus the Jim Carrey haircut, that fits me to a T in high school. He can't recall anything pent up from his childhood, but... like so many other murderers out there and so many other regular people out there, his father was addicted to cocaine. When Chris was younger, Chris said his dad's addiction didn't hurt him as much as he thought it would, but his mother thought he was having an affair because he couldn't account for this missing money. After Chris talked to his dad about the addiction, his father kicked the habit. Chris said his father is his hero. Now, he said he was closer to his father, but that his mother was loving and always wanted to know how he felt. He said that if anything was wrong, he wouldn't have told anyone and would have just dealt with it himself. That's not good. And this was a quote from him. I don't know if growing up that way kept me that way. Deal with things on your own, but then they build up so much that you can't deal with them and they take a hold of you. You never thought in a way they could take a hold of you.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you got to let those feelings out. And it sounds like that's exactly what happened. They took a hold, his feelings took a hold of him.
Yeah, I think it's so important for, you know, anybody listening who has stuff going on that they're keeping to themselves, talk to somebody.
Yeah.
You know, find somebody to talk to, a counselor who, you know, is going to maintain the confidentiality of the conversation if you're not comfortable talking with like friends or family. But, you know, it's stuff bottles up and it comes out in really bad ways oftentimes. And
yeah. And even if it's not like murdering your family, it can come out in so many other terrible ways.
Yeah. I mean, suicide obviously being the more common, the one that you think about more that seems to be happening more often.
Yep. Now, Chris and Shanann's relationship, they met when he was 25. On their first date, she told him he wasn't her type, but Chris continued to pursue her. He accompanied her to a colonoscopy, and she told him that he was a keeper after that.
That was, what, the first date?
It was a couple months into him, like, pursuing her. But come on, seriously. If you're on your first date and someone says they're not your type, just go.
Yeah.
Just go. Because you know what? There's a million other fish in the sea.
Right. Yeah, the initial, like, that gut reaction is probably the most truthful reaction.
Well, yeah, and if someone tells you that, you're going to spend the rest of your life with them trying to be someone you aren't, which is exactly what Chris said. He said he could never be himself with her.
Mm-hmm.
From there, he said Shanann made most of the decisions. He said she was dominant and took control of everything.
Finances and everything, right? Yeah, she had control of all the accounts. And
yeah, I have something about that in here, but I'll read it when we get to it. But that's another not good sign, that you can't have the other person controlling everything. Right. It just doesn't work out that way.
Not a healthy relationship. But, you know, also the other thought that just came to my mind is, as their relationship seemed to escalate pretty quickly. I mean, maybe that lack of relationships earlier in his life, whether it was, you know, this quick escalation with Shanann or what seems to be a very, very quick escalation with Nicole. I mean, it's, again, I can't really even imagine a relationship escalating from just meeting somebody to possibly killing off your family to be with her. I don't know, but for it to escalate that quickly to that. But maybe that's just him. I mean, maybe that kind of explains why their relationship escalated, or his relationship with Nicole escalated so quickly.
If you think back to like high school relationships, it kind of, minus the murdering your family part, it kind of works like that. You'll be with someone and then you're so in love so fast, and then you can dump them the next day to be with somebody else. So it's kind of,
yeah,
maybe it is that lack of experience. But just to touch on that money thing we were just talking about, the couple did have money problems. He never imagined that he'd have to file for bankruptcy, and they did. And it was mostly credit card debt from their wedding. And Chris didn't have access to their bank account, and he never asked to see it. And he said he would just bring Shanann home his paycheck. Like, that's not good, people.
And if I can insert a little bit of life advice, don't put yourself in major credit card debt for a wedding.
No, you're the best day. So I remember someone told me this. I can't remember who told me it, but I feel like it was an old man. And he said, the best day of your life is not supposed to be the most expensive day of your life.
Right.
And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. You're not supposed to be saddled with paying off
a wedding
for years to come. Like, you know, they, when you talk about relationships, or you hear, read about relationships, you know, what you hear people saying is, finances are the number one issue in relationships.
So my brother told me that on my wedding day.
Yeah. Good brother.
Yeah.
It is. It's like the number one. And then you add kids into the mix. And but so many people start off their relationships with $15,000-$20,000 weddings and stuff like that. They don't have real careers established and can't afford. I mean, if you can afford it, because you're wealthy, it's one thing. But if you're making 40 or 50 grand a year and you have a $20,000 wedding, it's not a good life choice.
When I was like 18, I knew a girl who was a little bit older than me, and she had a $30,000 wedding, and she was divorced before her parents even paid off the wedding. Like, yeah. No.
I mean, it's sad. I laugh, but it's definitely sad.
Right. It's one of those, like, things you have to laugh at you just have to laugh at it.
Yeah.
When Chris and Shanann got married, he told his family he didn't need them anymore because he had Shanann. It's possible Chris's mother didn't think Shanann was good enough for him and felt like Shanann took Chris away from them when they moved to Colorado.
What a weird thing to tell your family that you don't need them anymore. Like, it makes me wonder if there's some, again, other family dynamic there. That was mom overbearing? Is that why his childhood was like this and he didn't have many girlfriends?
Well, maybe, but he said he doesn't know if he was coached by Shanann or not when it came to how he treated his family, But he did cuss his mother out and did things he never thought he'd do. But I will say, and I hope that I'm not like this the next time I get married, but the first time with my ex-mother-in-law, like, it was just that the relationship was so hard. And I don't think I would ever have told him, like, you don't need your mother anymore or anything like that. But it is really weird. And someone actually once told me that I would end up being crazy because I have a son. Like, the mother of sons are just crazy. So I wonder if that, you know, there was that. And then, and then, you know, she's like, no, I'm his wife now. Like,
yeah.
I got it from here. And then the mom may have been like, no.
But again, I mean, just even, I get distancing yourselves from, you know, if you feel like you're kind of growing away from your family or people who have been very involved in your life, then you just kind of grow away, but, or grow apart. But to say, I would wonder what that conversation was where he said, no, I don't need you anymore because I have a wife.
Right. Did he just call him up out of the blue?
I mean, it's just, it's weird. Is she like trying to cook him meals still or wash his clothes or something like that? Like, what is this relationship that he felt that he needed to tell his family that he didn't need them anymore?
Right. I don't know. But Chris's mother and Shanann never agreed on anything, and his parents didn't attend their wedding. And he ended up dancing with his friend's mother during the groom's dance. I think that's really sad. Now, he was angry with Shanann over separating him from his family. And this is another direct quote from him. I don't know if that had something to do with it, that something inside me just triggered it. And then it just, like, all that pent-up from the wedding and everything, it's like a long fuse that finally just went to its end. So he's, like, blaming things from, I think they had been married 8 years. So he's like, no, I've had this fuse since 2010 and it's just going off this morning when I decide to.
Yeah. You know, they say all that working out and stuff is supposed to relieve stress, and it clearly didn't work for him.
No. Like we said earlier, you need to talk to somebody.
Yes. Somebody. That's there's plenty of options out there for anonymous and confidential hotlines.
Well, and then sometimes it's like you don't even have to continuously see somebody. If you just go in once and get the stuff off your chest, they listen, they don't judge you, and then you're good to go for a while.
Yeah.
I think his life could have been so much different if he had learned early in life, like, it's okay to talk about your feelings.
Yeah, which you would think he would have, since mommy was always asking about his feelings.
And in true fair fashion, he said he never would have thought any of this was bad in his marriage if he hadn't met Nicole. He mentions that he wished Shanann and the girls hadn't been in North Carolina for 5 weeks. Instead, he had only been there they'd only all been there the 1 week that he was there. In texts from Shanann to her friends, she said that before they went on the vacation, he couldn't get enough of her. And then once they were back, he didn't want anything to do with her. And she said she's not sure what changed, but all she could think of was that it was another woman, but she didn't think he had it in him to find another woman. So I think that's, like, really...
Is that telling about her that, you know, you hear from people who are very controlling, it's like, you know, you can't do anything without me, or, you know, it's one of those control things. Does she believe that because she's been telling him that? Like, is that why she's controlling the finances? Is that why she's controlling, because she wants to control him, or because, you know, was he useless without, like, was he just not getting anything done?
It's always, like, really amusing to me when, like, some woman thinks that, like, her man won't go find someone else. Like, they're perfectly capable
of it.
Yeah,
or vice versa,
yeah. But I'll just say that distance does not make the heart stronger. Like, that shouldn't have happened, especially she was pregnant. Like, she was newly pregnant. He should have been there for all that stuff. That's like such a dangerous, you know, time.
Do we know why or what the vacation was about? Was it truly just like going, taking the kids for the summer? Well, I mean, they weren't even in school.
No, probably, but, so. Right. Their family was in North Carolina, so just probably the beach, all those things.
But it wasn't like to get away or to go be with family because things weren't working out in the marriage or anything, as far as we know.
No, because she said that things were good before she left. Yeah. But of course they were. Then he had a month without her and he had his side chick there. And what really upset Chris was in July of 2018 when Shanann told him he could never talk to his parents again or have his parents see the granddaughters again. And this is because of an allergy that Celeste had to nuts, and Chris's mother gave her ice cream containing nuts. Her allergy was not severe, but Shanann thought his mother was trying to kill Celeste. So he didn't speak to his parents for about a month, and at that time they told Chris, like once they did start speaking again, they told Chris that they were unsure if they could ever forgive her for, you know, the things that she said to them. But it sounds like before the kids even came along, there was feelings that she was coming between him and his family. Like he was feeling that. And I think that really should have been addressed before the kids came along. So now we'll get into the heavier things.
This is gut-wrenching stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't read this transcript or if you haven't listened to the interview, just be prepared. I mean, we're going to talk about some of those details, but it's gut-wrenching. I mean, it's, you know, we've talked in previous podcasts about some of these murderers who commit suicide before we find out the details, and how much better it would be if we got to know what happened or if we knew more about it, if they were there to answer questions. And here we have this case where we have that opportunity, law enforcement has that opportunity, and it's almost just like sickening.
I don't want to know.
Yeah.
I wish he would have kept the details to himself.
But
my friend is, my one friend, Kristen. Hey, Kristen. She's like, no, because his mother wouldn't believe him without these details.
Right.
So I hope his mother believes him now.
Right. Well, and, you know, as we talk about this stuff and as many people, I think, are asking the same questions, how much of this, again, is even true?
Yeah. Yeah. The initial reports were that he had possibly killed the girls before Shanann had ever came back from her trip, but now he's saying that he killed them last.
Yeah.
So.
And so it's really disturbing to think that he's making all, you know, could be making all or some of these details up, as gut-wrenching as they are.
Yeah.
So.
Well, sometimes the truth is just like more unbelievable than fiction,
right.
And maybe that's what we're feeling with this.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the only one that really knows what happened. Now, remember I mentioned him going out with Nicole on Saturday night, and he didn't have another work gift card to pay for the dinner, and he couldn't ask her to pay, so that's when he uses the joint credit card with Shanann. This created a ton of anxiety because Chris thought this would be the final straw to Shanann. Like, he felt her climb into bed around 2 a.m. after getting home from a trip. He could feel her stirring around. Guilt gut is getting the best of him, but he decides to have sex with Shanann anyways. He said it felt like a test. He said it felt strange, and he questioned who he was and who he had become. He feels like having sex must have been a trigger point or like a button on a bomb, and it just blew up. So the sex was the button on the bomb from his parent thing from the wedding.
Right, from the fuse that's at the end, yes. So this is a bomb that has a fuse and a button and other mechanisms.
He's got a high IQ, so
right.
He made a really fancy bomb. But before blowing up, they went to sleep. Then he got up for work the next morning and woke Shanann up to talk. He felt like he had to say something to Shanann. That guilty conscience creeping in. He straddled her waist, and he thinks now that he looks back that Shanann may have thought he wanted to have sex again. They talked for about 15 to 20 minutes, going through all the weird emotions and things you say when you feel like a marriage is no longer working, like canceling an upcoming trip, to selling their home and moving away, to her saying she knew there was someone else, but him not admitting it, to him saying he just didn't think it would work anymore. He said during the conversation he felt more guilty than ever. I freaking bet he did.
Well, but knowing this full picture now, he felt this guilty about the affair that he ends up murdering his family. But murders his family and is able to stand there and have interviews, give interviews that, again, you look at this guy in these interviews and you think, man, he's pretty calm and collected, you know, that this is a guy who looks like maybe they were just having some marriage trouble and he's kind of smirking because he knows that,
yeah,
she's probably just taking the kids away. And yeah, I really wish she would just come back so we can work this all out. So that whole that guilty conscience that he's talking about is tough for me to imagine.
So let's separate the murder from just him trying to talk to her. Mm-hmm. So let's set the murder aside. If you feel like there's a possibility that other person knows what you've been doing, that guilt is like, you can't talk, you can't breathe, and you don't know what to do or say. So I bet, if you take the murder part aside, like, I bet you that's what he was feeling.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe. I can just imagine, like, that part of it. And then, like he says so many times, he doesn't know what happened, and then they're just dead. But at this point, he felt like Shanann would take the kids away or keep him from getting into the home after work. He said that morning it was a different type of fight. He said at first there was emotion, but then just anger because there was no love there. He said it was anger from him and desperation from Shanann. She knew something was wrong and wanted to fix it. He said out of rage, he just snapped. So, a side note before we continue, since Chris Watts has been in prison, his IQ has been tested, and it's come back between 135 and 140, which is really high. I've heard of other murderers having a really high IQ, so I researched to see if that was a thing. It isn't. Most have an average IQ of 94, so if it happens to be high, we just end up hearing about it in the media. But I did find an interesting fact. Killers motivated by anger had a higher IQ than those motivated by financial gain. Now, his is, if he really is a 140, like, that's really high.
Yeah. It's genius level.
Yeah. But if you listen to him talk, he doesn't sound like that.
No. You could actually, if you are not aware, he still has a YouTube channel out there with old videos. I was watching one the other day of him giving a presentation for, I don't know if he was in class or what it was about, but I think he was actually talking about relationships. Uh-huh. I didn't watch too much of it, but he's kind of a dope. So, you know, sometimes people with high IQs have trouble communicating.
That's true.
Some of it could be that, but he certainly doesn't seem, nothing about that seemed to be that genius level IQ.
Right. But if it is high and he does have a hard time communicating, makes sense why he would keep all of his feelings bottled up.
Yeah.
So after his guilt gut get out of the marriage, this isn't going to work conversation with Shanann, he put both hands around her neck and strangled her.
Yeah, so he's sitting on her as they're talking, mm-hmm. right? So I think you mentioned that.
Straddling.
She's laying on the bed. He's straddling her waist, baby and belly, which is weird enough as it is to have been who've started a conversation or engaged in a conversation,
yeah,
sitting on her waist, knowing that there's a baby in her belly, and to continue to talk for 20 minutes or more,
yeah,
straddling her waist. I mean, just
I feel like I would have suffocated if anybody had done that to me back then.
I mean, I feel like the opposite would be somewhat normal, that maybe the wife or a woman would be sitting on a man that way, but it just seems really awkward for a man to sit on a woman that way and to have a conversation.
Right. Well, he said she never fought back or screamed, and he doesn't know why she didn't fight back, but he believes she may have been praying. He read in the Bible, "Forgive these people, for they do not know what they do," and he wonders if maybe Shanann was saying that in her head. He says he doesn't want to know what Shanann saw when she looked back at him while he was strangling her.
Him saying that makes me wonder if she did actually say that. Like, if she was actually saying that as he's strangling her.
Maybe. I feel like if someone was strangling me, that's not what I would be saying.
Yeah.
But he's been into the Bible a lot lately, so maybe that's where he got it from. But maybe she was saying it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, because even if she did fight back, and he was still going to, like, try to kill her, what was her plan? Would she have done? I don't know.
Yeah. But it also makes me wonder, how much of this is true?
Right.
Has he started creating a different reality in his head?
Which is very possible.
Is that PTSD type of thing that he's...
And he spent so much time in prison at this point. He's had months to come up with whatever he wants to say. Yeah. He denies that he covered her face with anything. He doesn't recall pinning her arms down. At his sentencing, the prosecutor said it takes 2 to 4 minutes to strangle someone, and he wants to know why couldn't he just stop? Like, why couldn't he let go? And, like, 2 to 4 minutes is a long time to be doing something forceful as strangling someone. Even if she wasn't fighting back, like, that still isn't, I don't think, is an easy thing to just, you know... You're exerting energy. You're going to feel it between 2 and 4 minutes. Why he may have been on the Thrive patch. I don't want to blame that's like why he did this, but it could have given him the strength.
Yeah. And it's maybe not even so much about strength. Like, that's an active act. Unless he was just leaning on her, like leaning forward so much that his body weight was doing a lot of it. But if he was truly squeezing, it's difficult to squeeze
that hard
for 2 to 4 minutes. It's really just not easy.
Well, it makes me wonder, maybe he was leaning forward. But I don't know how you could do that for 2 to 4 minutes without stopping to think, like, what the fuck am I doing? How does that thought not happen? Like, I don't know. He said time felt like it was standing still, and he could see his life disappearing before his eyes, but he just couldn't let go. I feel like that kind of contradicts, like, why, with him saying, why couldn't I just let go? I don't know.
Yeah.
But another quote directly from him: I feel like in the back of my head that was going to happen. And just like at the end of the conversation, it was just like, that's what happened. I just wish I could have let go. And another thing he said was, like, the whole, everything that happened that morning, I just don't know. Like I try to go back in my head. I'm just like, I didn't want to do this, but I did it. Everything just kind of like, it just felt like it was, I don't even want to say it felt like I had to. It just felt like there was already something in my mind that was implanted that I was going to do it. And when I woke up in the morning, that it was going to happen, and I had no control over it. It was like picturing someone around you, holding your hands, holding you, and keeping you from letting go. It's like he's kind of taking accountability for it, but not really. Like, maybe 1%. He's like, yeah, I did this, but I had no control over myself.
He's blaming the aliens or something, you know?
Yeah.
It's definitely a strange, and again, kind of goes back to how much of this crap is made up, as he's been sitting around answering questions and hearing what's in the news and about him, and thinking about how he wants to portray this. And it's maybe easier to say, oh, well, I hadn't, for whatever reason, I didn't feel like I had control of my body, is maybe an easier thing to say than, I was going to kill her.
Yeah.
Like I had had enough. I didn't want to do this anymore and I was going to kill her. Like it's shifting yeah. accountability, shifting blame to some imaginary.
And he, power. You know, he has to like live with himself now. So maybe it's easier for him to tell himself these things, like make himself believe it. Once Shanann was gone, he said he didn't know what was happening and it felt like a traumatic event. But yeah, it was a traumatic event, Chris. You killed your fucking wife. Like, come on, man. And he keeps saying this a lot during the interview, but he claims he didn't know what happened. He didn't know what to do. He couldn't control his thoughts or actions. People ask why he didn't call 911. His response is that no one knows what they would do in that situation. You know what I wouldn't do? Kill my spouse.
Right.
Like, come on, man. So then Bella walks in and wants to know what's wrong with mommy.
Yeah, as if this whole thing isn't bad enough up to this point. Like the sitting on her waist, strangling her for 2 to 4 minutes or however long it actually took to kill her. Then, I mean, this is where this stuff is really, really gut-wrenching, really hard to take.
He told her, "Mommy don't feel good." He wrapped Shanann face down in the bed sheet and tried to carry her downstairs, lost his grip, and ended up pulling her down the stairs. Bella is watching this entire thing take place. She begins crying and asks again, "What's wrong with Mommy?" He told Bella again that she didn't feel good. He said Bella never tried to touch or wake Shanann. Chris, Shanann, and Bella made their way down the stairs where he backed his truck into the driveway and put Shanann in the floorboard of the truck. When he got inside, Celeste was awake, probably from the sound of Shanann or from Chris dropping Shanann from her hitting the floor. He goes back to not knowing what happened. Being a dad was the best part of his life and he took it all away. He felt like someone else had control over him and he couldn't fight back. Like, he just keeps going back to this over and over in the interview.
Yeah, because, again, it's much harder to say and admit to, even knowing that you've already done this, to have to live with yourself, as you mentioned, that there were 1,000 moments after he... I mean, for, you know, leaving out the actual act of killing his wife, there was 1,000 plus moments after that, that he could have taken some other action if he wasn't just a cold-blooded killer. I mean, because that's to say, no, I killed my wife. My daughter saw her dead. Saw me wrap her up and drop her down the stairs and have to drag her out to my truck. Both daughters being awake and aware of what's going on, even at 3 and 4 years old, knowing that something is going on, he could have called the police. He could have just left.
You want to know what he does next? He grabs his fucking lunchbox and puts both girls and his lunchbox in the backseat of his truck.
Yeah.
Like, that's, I'm not laughing because it's funny. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, it's again, all the details of this thing is, that is much more of a cold-blooded, psychopath kind of behavior.
So then he covers her head and feet with trash bags so the girls couldn't see her face.
Yeah, this is like Dexter. You know, it's that calculation of, I got to have lunch at some point because I'm going for a ride to bury my wife, you know, so I better take my lunchbox.
Bella is still asking if mommy was okay. Chris told both girls that mommy would be fine. So along with his lunchbox, dead wife and children, he put a gas can in his truck and thought of committing suicide after everything happened. He didn't feel like he deserved to live, but he decided not to kill himself at the oil site because he could have killed or injured more people because of an explosion or a fire out there.
Yeah, so instead he just limited it to himself and all the girls.
Like, but he didn't even kill himself, so.
Well, yeah, sorry, I meant just limited to Shanann and all the girls.
Yeah, and his baby.
Yeah.
Poor baby.
Again, 1,000+ moments from in the house when Bella walks in to think, you know, that he could have taken some other action. Like, I can't imagine looking into your kid's eye if you are not just kind of a cold-blooded psychopath.
Right.
And realizing what you've done, the gravity of the situation, and thinking, I am totally out of control.
Let me just walk away.
Just walk away.
Yeah.
Again, could have walked down the road, could have called the cops, could have just gone to a neighbor, could have said, hey, girls, go next door.
Well, yeah, because it's like he didn't even really have a plan anyways. Like, right. So he... I don't really think it was premeditated because, like, he didn't really have a plan for after all of this. Like, he wanted to be with the girl, but he wasn't going to live with the girl. Right. It wasn't like he had some master thing of what he was going to do to try and cover this up. Like, he just...
Yeah.
And then he ends up telling on himself a couple days later.
And even with the daughters, like, if this was planned out, they're just kind of stumbling upon the situation. So he did nothing to try to shelter them from it or hide them from it or make sure that they didn't just go running and screaming out of the house when this whole thing happened.
Right.
Or while he was in the middle of the act. Like, what if they walked in while he was in the act of strangling Shanann?
Yeah.
Like, there really was no plan, which... in my mind would make it easier to walk away or to alter the course at some point.
Yeah.
And at least let the girls live again, unless you're just,
I know reading this, interview and hearing the questions that Bella was asking was like, that part felt like extra hard to me. Cause we have young kids and I can just hear them, like hear their voices and see how scared that would make them, and that's just like really hard to comprehend or just take in. I mean, I have a hard time even telling our kids no, so I can't imagine telling them like terrifying like just heartless things. So he said he drove out to the oil site, he was nervous and didn't know what was going on again, but obviously he knew something if he thought to bring that gas can.
Yeah.
So he was having some sort of thoughts, whether he wants to admit it or not. And he also brought a shovel to bury Shanann. So once they're at the oil field, he gets Shanann out and laid her on the ground. And the girls asked, what are you doing with mommy? And he doesn't recall what he told them, which means he does. And it's probably really fucking terrible. And he doesn't want to tell us about it. So he took Cece's life first. He put a blue Yankees blanket over her head and strangled her in the back seat. Bella sat and watched and didn't say anything. He said he had no idea how long it took to strangle Celeste or Cece because he had no concept of time. He said he wasn't thinking because if he was, none of this would have happened. Are we up to like number 20 of him saying he just doesn't know?
Yeah, or that he's not thinking, or he couldn't control it, or whatever. I can understand that for a short period of time. I could buy that. I totally lost control for the murder of Shanann.
Right.
I mean, you hear the crimes of passion. Somebody's just totally lost control. They, you know, for whatever reason, but. For there to have been that, him to wrap her up, drag her down the stairs, load her into the truck, load his damn lunchbox into the truck, go get a shovel and a gas can, and then drive however far this oil field is from the house. 45 minutes. You've regained control. Like, even if...
Right, if you were in some sort of blackout, you're back.
Yes.
You're back, yeah. So, after Cece is gone, he took her body from the truck, walked her up to an oil tank, opened the hatch, and dropped her in feet first, closed the hatch, and went back to the truck. Bella asked him, is the same thing going to happen to me as CC? Chris is unsure if he said yes. I'm sure he did. He put the blanket over her head, one hand over her nose and mouth, and the other around her neck. Her last words were, "Daddy, no." He then put her in a separate oil tank from Celeste. He returned back to the truck and buried Shanann. He was asked if Shanann had given, like, partially given birth when he buried her. He said no. And I did research if women will deliver a baby if the woman dies. And it can happen, but it doesn't always. It's called a coffin birth, and it's morbid. If you want more information, just Google it, because, ugh, it's terrible.
So they asked him that in this interview, and, but I...
And I don't know if they... I imagine, obviously, they found her that way because they wouldn't have asked the question.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's just... That's... I mean, God, the whole thing is just so disturbing.
It is. On his way home, he placed the blanket he used to strangle the girls in a dumpster in his neighborhood, along with the clothes he wore during the murders. He feels like taking Bella and Celeste's lives was caused by anger with Shanann, and he just took it out on everyone that morning. He said he had never been angry before, and this was the epitome of being angry. He should have talked to someone.
Yeah.
God. So he's unsure how he was able to act normal around his coworkers after he killed his family. But what I thought was interesting, so he said he got up for work that morning and had this conversation with Shanann. Then he kills her. Then he packs up the girls. He does all this stuff and he goes to work. So I imagine he left for work the time he normally would. Where were all his coworkers while he's killing his daughters out in the field? That's why I don't think the timeline is right.
Well, I mean, if you're out in the oil field, I mean, you're talking about potentially miles, square Maybe. Miles or hundreds of square miles, potentially of desert where these, where all this stuff is. I mean,
But did he show up late for work that day? I mean, did he take a break in between from doing this and then going straight to work? Like, right. What? Something seems like he would have encountered somebody.
Yeah.
He said he's since prayed for the hazmat workers and anyone else who had to deal with the aftermath or see the aftermath.
Yeah.
How kind of you, Chris.
Which is the world at this point. I mean, we'll probably continue to talk about the impact that these things have on everybody who hears about them. It just makes you look at the world a little bit differently.
Yeah, because everybody that knows him just can't believe that he would do it. Yeah. That's like you or, you know, anybody else we know could be that person and you just don't know it. It puts that fear in you.
Yeah, just a quiet, normal, quote unquote, normal guy that's selling you some multi-level marketing crap.
Yeah.
is capable of and maybe moments away from murdering his family.
Yep. With regard to why he pled guilty, this is a quote directly from him. He said, "I didn't want anybody else. I didn't want them to go through this for 2 or 4 years. I didn't want my attorneys to lie for me for 2 to 4 years. They would have done anything I told them to do. I don't see how they can do that." Like, you know, that's what attorneys do. You know, like they take their defendant and they say, "Hey, like what happened? Okay, we'll go with this story." So a few weeks after he was arrested, he told his attorneys the truth about everything. They asked him if he was offered a plea deal if he'd plead guilty. He said yes, just to end it all. He says he didn't want everyone to relive the case every day. He said his attorneys did not try to convince him to plead guilty, and he had and they had like a lot of creative motions and were ready to fight for him if he wanted to. He said he does not regret taking the plea deal, but he never thought he'd spend the rest of his life in prison. Like, I'm not really sure what he thought he was going to get. What, like 3 to 5 years? Because right, you said you did it. I don't know. He told his parents the night before he pled guilty that he was pleading guilty for a reason. They did not want him to do that. We've already kind of mentioned it, but we'll talk more about the Thrive patch, but he was wearing it at the time of the murders, and his parents have received correspondence from all over the world saying that those are not FDA approved and can alter someone's mind. His parents also wanted him to use the defense of CPTSD, which is complex post-traumatic stress disorder, for being in an emotionally abusive relationship. He said he could relate to some of the information, but it didn't make up for what happened. So you looked up the Thrive patch a little bit, and did you see anything about?
No, I mean, so what you'll see if you do some research into these patches is basically everybody's asking these same questions about as they relate to Chris Watts. I mean, it looks like it was hard to find anything prior to this situation where people were talking about it truly altering their mood in this way. So it's an energy patch. I mean, the ingredients appear to be most of the stuff that you would find in other energy products. Those natural, quote unquote, natural like plants that Garcinia Cambogia or whatever, whatever that thing is called. I can't think of the exact, but those things that you'll probably see like in your Monster, your Red Bull, or your 5-hour energy or something like that. It's just stuff, and most of that stuff, there's doubt that it even really has any true effect on people for what it claims to do. So there really just isn't a lot. Most of the speculation is around this particular situation. Otherwise, it's like, it gives you some energy.
He did say that while using those, he was only getting about 3 hours of sleep a night. And Nicole recalled that they'd just be sitting there talking on the couch and he'd fall asleep and then he'd wake back up and continue the conversation where it left off, which is just really weird. But I think exhaustion can do that too. And if you're using something to keep you awake and then you just start passing out, I don't know. But in October, prosecutors went to Shanann's parents and asked about a plea deal instead of the death penalty. They were told there wasn't enough as evidence on certain things, so like he could have possibly gotten off. Chris was offered to see the crime scene photos, but he refused. He did not want Shanann's family to see them either. And he was told that if they did go to trial, her family would see those photos, and he didn't want to. He would also have to see them if he went to trial, and he'd have to see it beforehand so that he didn't have a reaction once they were there. So he did not want that. He felt by taking the plea deal, Shanann's family could start to have closure. He wanted everyone to know Shanann was a loving wife who always wanted to help. During his interrogation, it was mentioned that Shanann may have killed the girls, and he just went with it. He knew his parents would. So that was like the story, everyone knew it wasn't true, but that was what was in the news that he had said. And his parents were in the lobby during the interrogation, and he knew that they would believe it because they didn't like Shanann. So he just went with it. Now, he really hasn't talked to Nicole since it happened. He talked to her briefly, and Nicole had thought Shanann had took off with the girls, and she told him not to contact her until it was done. Now, he wishes that he could speak with her one last time to apologize about what happened, but she's refused to speak with his attorney.
Or corroborate stories or something.
And what Chris's life looks like now. He has a book in his cell, which was the same book he used to read to Celeste. He reads the book as well as scripture every night to the girls. Every time he closes his eyes, he still hears Bella scream, "Daddy, no." which he deserves that.
Yeah.
I hope it haunts him. He does not take psych meds in prison, even though most of the people there do, he said. And he tries to keep a low profile. He misses Bojangles, Georgia Boy Barbecue, and Shanann's cooking.
Yeah.
That's, like, weird.
It's just...
It's like he's lost his... And like it's like almost like in his mind, he's, like, lost his wife to cancer or something.
Yeah.
It's like he's completely separated it. Yeah. He gets a lot of letters in prison. He throws the weird ones out, and he won't respond to the media. So that just... I can't send him a letter and get a response. I wanted to. I don't know what I was going to say, but I really was like...
You were going to be one of those creeps that's writing... It's writing people in prison.
Probably. Like Mary Rice from our first episode.
Yeah, that other weird group of people who, if they're not trying to throw their name out there to connect themselves to these people who have done really terrible things, they're falling in love with them through letters. And while they're in prison, like
I'll let the podcast be my 15 minutes of fame. Okay. he said he had never read the Bible before going to prison, but he has now read it cover to cover, and he helps other inmates memorize scriptures. Now he wonders if any of his friends could say good things about him after what happened, but then he realized he shouldn't take to heart what people think about him, because what God thinks about him is the only thing that matters now. And he has asked God for forgiveness.
Yeah.
He said that he has done some good things in his life, but he screwed up the most important thing. He hopes he can help other people with the time he has left. It's going to take a long time for the guilt to go away. People are defining him by this one moment in his life.
Well, yeah, it should as they should.
Right. Like normally in normal situations, I'm like, how would you feel if someone treated you a certain way based off of one thing that you did in your life? But in this situation.
Yeah. When that one thing is taking the lives
like murder.
Of
and it wasn't one thing. It was like four
and
things.
An unborn child. Yeah.
Come on, Chris. He said, I never knew I could have a relationship with God like I do now. It's like the amazing grace with all of this, but I just wish nobody had to pay any kind of price for this. I know there is a purpose for everybody. I just hope I can find mine. And so from the stuff I mentioned earlier to like, remember that, because I want to talk about it later, and what I just read to you, it sounds to me like he's in some sort of like 12-step program in prison. And I tried to see if that was like a 12 steps for murderers. And when I Googled that, it was like 12 steps to murder. Like, right. No, that's not where I was going. But could you imagine?
You all heard it here that she's Googling about 12 steps to murder.
I did. Like, could you imagine being that guy's sponsor? What would that be like?
Really. Like, what is this recovery program? I mean, they're.
Because, I mean, this sounds like it, because one of the steps in the, you know, the 12 steps of AA, at least, is to help others, which is what he's doing with this, the scripture. And he's also trying to find his purpose. And he, like this part right here, this whole confession, if it's true, would be the whole where you tell, I mean, you generally just tell your sponsor all of your things that you've done, and then the making amends, it sounds like he's basically at this point trying to make the living amends, where you just live your life a different way.
Yeah.
So that, yeah, there's clearly, and then the whole heavily relying on God now, that's right. Definitely a part of that normal 12-step thing. So maybe there's like a, I don't know. But there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of murderers out there, and a lot of them find God once they're in prison. So I feel like there's probably some outlined thing there. And just to wrap this episode up, Chris Watts on Future Love, he was asked if he thought he'd ever fall in love again. He said, no, I don't think that's going to happen. I'm not the guy that's down the street. What's his name? And it's redacted, so you can't see it. But I'm wondering if he's referring to Stephen Avery. He said he heard he got engaged over a letter, and that's pretty insane. But it could also be like Manson, Charles Manson, or like, I know that Scott Peterson gets a ton of women writing into him. So I wonder who he's talking about. I wonder where he actually is right now.
Well, I mean, obviously, as we've talked about in this and in other episodes, there's no shortage of crazy ass people
wanting to
write in and
get a piece of that.
Yeah. Build a relationship with somebody who they're never going to have a real relationship with. Maybe we can do an episode one day about the 15 minutes of fame people and this phenomenon of these people who write into prisoners.
Yeah, that would be an interesting thing to research.
Yeah. So. Again, what a disturbing situation. To know these details.
I think that, just my final thought on this, I think he puts a lot, I think he puts too much of this on the affair and not really holding himself accountable for what he did. It seems like the affair to him is still like what's like right in front of him, and maybe everything else is like kind of behind that.
Yeah.
And I would just say, talk to someone.
Yeah. And for some of my final thoughts, I've talked about it, but I'm really curious to know how this story is going to develop in the coming years. I mean, he's got a lifetime of prison ahead of him. How old is he?
33.
33 years
old. He might
be
34 now. Yeah.
So probably, if he lives to a normal age, 50 years of prison ahead of him, that'll be a lot of, there's going to continue to be these, you know, people who are interested in this case. He'll probably continue to talk about it. Mm-hmm. People, you know, continue to ask him about it. And I'm really curious to know how this is going to evolve, because I don't feel like we're getting the truth. We still haven't really heard from Nicole. I'm a little surprised, and maybe there has been more investigation into her and we're just not aware because they've cleared her of anything. Right. But I really feel like we're not getting the truth, and that maybe even some of these really graphic details are not even the truth. There just seems to be this element almost of like, does he truly have some mental disorder? Is he truly like, you know, psychopathic or sociopathic or one of those things that he doesn't really even get emotional about this?
Right.
Doesn't, you know, can talk about murdering his 3 and 4 year old children, an unborn child, and his wife, not really get emotional. Is it because he didn't really? Is it because he did, but he can't tell us the real truth, like the full truth? Was right. Somebody else there? Was, you know, is he covering up for some bad things that Shanann did? I don't want to, you know, throw that speculation on somebody else, but there just seems to be something that's missing from here.
I bet you that like psychologists and stuff are going to be all over him forever trying to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad we redid this episode. I'm glad it has more details. I'm glad we got Shanann's name right finally.
Yeah,
I really took a beating over the internet for that one, guys. You know, iTunes, people leave comments on iTunes and we can't even respond that way. I wish that if there were problems with the podcast that, you know, you message us in a way we could directly get back to you, instead of just bashing us on the internet, and we can't really say anything back. Now we don't know if those people will ever listen to an episode again.
Right.
But it is important to keep in mind that I started this podcast for my friends to listen to. So we had something to talk about, and it's a good way for David and I to spend time together. So I don't want to be upset over the comments, and we are just trying to do better.
Yeah. I mean, this is a redo, but of episode
10.
So this is episode
10.5.
Yep, we did an episode 11.
Yes.
And so 11 episodes in, and at the point where we recorded this one the first time, this is our 10th episode, and people have got to be able to see that. They know that we're working on this. Interesting to me, the fierce reaction that people had over getting the victim's name wrong. Very uncommon. Have never in my life heard anybody's name spelled or pronounced that way.
I researched it. It means Wise River.
Oh, okay. And it's not to, you know, when we got it wrong in the original episode, it wasn't out of any disrespect. It wasn't because we didn't care, but the fierce reaction from some people was a little bit, knowing that we had addressed it also. Like, we went back and we added some information at the beginning and just said, hey, sorry.
The attacks came in more after I added the clip about saying I was sorry for saying the name wrong. I think that's really like a really bizarre thing too. I just pulled the episode down and we decided to start over, and here we are. So
if you have feedback for us, please email us at youhadmeatmurder@gmail.com.
Or send us a message on Instagram.
Drop into our website, youhadmeatmurder.com. Leave a comment on there. You can message us from there.
Yeah.
Pinterest. You can
even message on Pinterest, people, if you're really looking for a way to get through.
Yeah. It will be happy to take any criticism that you have, any, whether it's just terrible stuff or not.
I will not be happy to hear that.
Well, not happy. We will happily take it, not be happy with it. But but I would much rather, if there's something we can do better, let us know.
Right.
Let us know in a way that we can improve.
And even be able to respond instead of just putting it out there where you're behind your keyboard and we have nothing to fire back with.
Yeah.
Or
no way to resolve it other than,
now we've addressed it on here, and hopefully those people are listening.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah. Anyways, thanks for listening. And just make sure you follow us on Instagram at youhadmeatmurder and drop by our website, youhadmeatmurder.com, and send us a Gmail at youhadmeatmurder.
We already covered all that.
I know, but I just, just so everybody knows, that's where we hang out.
All right.
All right. Until next time.
Bye.
Bye.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.